On the way to the club this evening, there was a kid. Nice kid. He was standing out in front of the building crying. Now, the reason that I'm going to the point of mentioning this is because this kid constitutes a big break in my life. This evening, my luck took a tremendous change. Well, maybe I should give you a brief rundown on my family background, so then you'll have more of an insight into this. I come from a very poor family. You know how in the community there's those three sets of income brackets? There's the first income bracket that has everything. Anything they can imagine, they got it. And then there's the second income bracket where they don't have as much as the first, but they're holding their own. And right behind them is the income bracket that my family was in. My family had nothing. Do you know how little nothing is? You have to have very, very little to have nothing. All that we had in my family was each other. And there was too many of us. My mother and father were so poor that they couldn't afford to have any children. So the lady next door had us. In fact, when I was 14 years old, I had a job on the garbage truck. It paid $2 a week and all you could eat. And tonight, it took a change. When I was coming into the club, there was this kid. He was about four, standing out in front of the club. The tears were running down his face. He was crying. He had a funny little cap turned sideways on his head, and he had a half pint of something or other in his pocket, and he would cry a while, and then it'd stop and take him a little slug, and he'd cry some more. And I thought maybe the kid had been mistreated. So I stopped, and I said to him, kid, what are you crying about? What's the matter? And the kid said,
said, mister, he said my mother sent me to the store and I had $2 and there's 11 kids in our family and all of us have to eat off that $2. And on the way, a man stopped me and took a dollar of it.
I said, kid, you say that a man stopped you and took a dollar of the money?
He said, yes, sir.
I said, well, gee, kid, didn't you yell for the police? You look like a pretty bright kid. Don't tell me you just stood there while the man snatched your money. I said, kid, you must have yelled. Didn't you yell, boy?
He said, calm down, mister. I'm the one that lost the money. He said, yeah, I yelled.
I said, well, how loud? How loud did you yell? Let me hear you yell.
He said, police, police, police.
I said, kid, you mean to tell me that you can't yell no louder than that?
He said, no, sir.
So I took the other dollar. Watch those sports cars. If you know anybody with one of those small foreign sports cars, tell them to be careful. Those cars are very dangerous. I know a fella, he had one, and he had, first day he got it, he was taking his old lady out for a ride in it, and they were racing up and down the turnpike. And he happened to glance behind him when he should have been glancing in front, and smash! Right into the back of one of those great big gasoline tankers. Terrible accident. The fella's arm got mangled. In fact, to the point where it was hanging on by one little muscle. He got out of the accident, he looked at his arm, and he said to himself, I think I'm gonna have to see a doctor. So he rushed over to the doctor's office, and he showed the doctor the arm hanging on by the one little muscle, and he asked the doctor what could be done. Doctor said, young man, I'm gonna be perfectly frank with you about this. The only solution that I could suggest would be to cut it off.
Well, I said, what? Cut my arm off?
Look, he said, I can't let you cut my arm off. He said, I came to you to get my arm fixed. So now, if you can't fix it, there must be another doctor in town who's had a little more experience with this type of thing than you. He said, isn't there somebody else that I can see? Doc said, well, he said, there is another doctor who lives on the other side of town. He's handled a few more cases of this type than I have. Why not go consult him? So the fella jumps in the cab and he rides over the other side of town. He makes the appointment. He goes in, shows the doctor the arm hanging on by the one little muscle, and explains that the first doctor said he'd have to cut it off, and he asks his opinion. Doctor says, "Well, young man, I'm afraid that likewise in this situation I'd have to agree with my colleague, because all that I could suggest would be to cut it off also." Well, I said, "Look." I said, "What are you guys? What were you doing in medical school? Why'd you waste? You're supposed to fix my arm. Said, I'm not letting nobody just hack one of my limbs off. Said, now who can I see?" Said, you guys are nuts. You're quacks. That's what you are, but you bird brain medical school flunkies. Now who can I see about my arm? Who's the best man in the world that I can? You guys didn't even study first aid." Doctor said, "Well, there is a doctor who lives in Switzerland. He's a German doctor called Dr. Otto von Sever." Said, "Go see von Sever. He's the finest." So the fella makes a reservation. He flies over to Switzerland. He gets the appointment with von Sever. He dashes into the office, and he shows von Sever the arm hanging on by the one little muscle and explains that the first two American doctors said they'd have to cut it off, and he asks von Sever's opinion. Von Sever very coolly put on his shades, lit him a cigarette, poured him a scotch and water, and he told the young man, he said, "Young man, be cool." Said, "Steady! Everything gonna be all right. Said, you with the boss now, Daddy. What I say goes. There's nobody after me. Said, now lay that arm on the table." So the fellow went over and he laid the arm and the one little muscle on the table, and von Sever dashed over to the medical library and snatched down a giant volume. And he ripped through the pages and he started reading, and the fellow could hear him under his breath as he read, and he would say, "Mm-hmm. Yeah." And he grabbed his microscope and he went over and he looked at the one little muscle and examined it closely, and he ran back and he got another volume and he started reading some more, and he says, "Well, I'll be. Say, yep," he said, "that's just like I figured." Said, "Young man," said, "we ain't got to cut that off." The fella said, "No." Von Sever said, "Heck no." He said, "In 15 minutes, that's gonna fall off by itself." I went into an employment agency the other day while jobs were slow. You know, I don't usually patronize those types of places, but the other day I went into one. Thought I might pick up a little something, you know, like a wallet, a watch, or a couple of dollars. You know, you can't blame a guy for trying to make a buck, you know. And, well, anyway, while I was in there, there was another fellow there. I got there before him, but he was one of those sneaky types of guys, and he switched applications in the basket. He put mine on the bottom, so the man snatched his first, and the man says to him, he says, "Young man," he said, "why were you laid off from your last job?" I said, "Laid off?" I said, "I wasn't laid off." I said, "I quit." The man said, "You quit?" I said, "Why'd you quit?" I said, "Well," he said, "because the boss said something that I didn't like." So I said, "Yeah?" She said, "Well, what did he say?" I said, "Well, I didn't mind it when he said I was lazy. And I didn't get mad when he said I was stupid either. But when he said I was fired, I quit." There was another fellow there to see about a job for the railroad. He didn't look very bright, but they had to extend him the normal courtesies. The boss, the manager there, picked up the fellow's application, and he says to him, he said, "Young man," he said, "I see here that you're interested in the position of railroad crossing guard." He said, "Now, one of the prerequisites for this job is that you must have a college education." He said, "Do you have a college education?" And the fellow said, "Yes, sir, mm-hmm." He said, "I got a college education." Man said, "Well, good." He said, "Perhaps we should run through a few situations and see how you could adapt yourself to finding the proper solution." He said, "Now, young man," he said, "let's assume that there are two sets of tracks running east and west. There are some people on the platform waiting for the train coming from the east. It isn't a scheduled stop. The people want to get on. How would you stop the train?"
First said, "Did the train come from the east and the people want to get on the train, and it isn't a scheduled stop, what would I do?"
Man said, "That's right." So now, what would you do?
Fred said, you know that little shack there by the railroad track? He said, I'd go in that little shack, and I'd get that lamp out that they gave you, and I'd come back, and I'd stand there right across that railroad track, and I'd just wave that lamp all around over my head. I'd just stand there waving that lamp up and down from side to side. Said, I'd just wave that lamp, and the man on the train would see me waving the lamp, and he'd stop the train. And the people would get on. Man said, very good, very good. Said, now let's take another situation. Said, let's imagine that there is a train coming from the west. And likewise, it's not a scheduled stop, and there's some people on the platform who would like to board the train. What would you do in this situation?
First said, since I used the lamp the first time, he said, I go back into my little shack and get the flag out. He said, I just love to use that flag. You know, I always have like flags. He said, I go back and I get that flag. And I really put it on the show for them people on that platform. He said, I just wave that flag all around from side to side. He said, and I just jump up and down, waving the flag all over the place. And a man on the train would see the flag and stop the train and the people they get on.
The man said, very good, very good. He said, now here's the final situation. He said, now if you can answer this question properly, you have the job. You're the man we're looking for. He said, now let's assume that there is only one set of tracks. Now you follow me closely. There's only one set of tracks. And there's a train coming from the east and a train coming from the west. What would you do now?
First said, just a minute now, just a minute. Did you say only one set of tracks?
The man said, that's right.
Said, the train come from the east and the train come from the west on one set of tracks?
The man said, that's right. What would you do?
First said, I'll go home and get my sister.
The man said, go home and get your sister? Why would you go get your sister?
First said, because she ain't never seen a train wreck.
A bus the other day, which is in itself a pretty unusual thing for me because I usually travel by cabs. And I had just boarded a bus and ridden a few blocks when the bus driver saw this woman standing on the corner and he slammed on brakes, opened the door, and he noticed that the woman had a dog with her. The woman started to board the bus and the driver said, ma'am, he said, I'm very sorry, but no animals are allowed on the buses. The woman said, what? What do you mean no animals allowed on the buses? Driver said, now, ma'am, he said, it isn't me. He said, it's the company rules. The company doesn't allow animals on the buses, and if they don't allow them on here, the dog can't get on. And the woman said, well, you know what you can do with your bus. Driver said, lady, if you do the same thing with the dog, you can get on. I received a phone call yesterday from a friend of mine's father, and he called to tell me about my buddy's recent trip to Africa. This fellow went on a trip to Africa while game hunting. He went to get a lion, and his father called, told me that he got over to Africa all right, and he got him a safari together of 75 pack boys, and they took off into the burning, hot, sticky, mosquito-infested, murky jungles looking for a lion. At the end of 3 days, he still hadn't found a lion yet. All that he had shot was one elephant, three hippopotamus, two pack boys, and the guide. Still no lion. He was standing in the middle of a clearing about sundown when he said, the heck with it. I'll go back to camp, get a good night's rest, and I'll find a lion tomorrow. He turned around to walk out of the clearing, and standing right in front of him was a giant jungle lion. And this lion had a bad reputation. All the other lions in the jungle were talking about this lion. The fellow looked at the lion and he snatched his shotgun, put it to his shoulder, squared the lion away in the sights and pulled the trigger and the gun went click. No ammunition. So he knew that this was it. So he laid the gun down and he kneeled down. Right then the lion kneeled down. Then the fellow crossed himself and the lion crossed himself. And the guy looked out of the corner of his eye at the lion. He said, say, Mr. Lion, he said, are you praying too? And the lion said, you're the only one praying because, Daddy, I'm saying grace. The other night in the club, I noticed something. And in my own words, I termed it as what might be the consequences of the inferiority complex. Well, I'll give it to you like this. Standing by the door, there was this very huge fellow. He was about 6'7", you know, and he weighed about 285. And he was just hanging around the door. He wasn't buying anything. He hadn't paid the admission, just hanging out in front of the place. Through the door walked a little short guy. He had a sheet of paper in his hand, and he was reading from the paper to himself. As he walked through the door, the big fella touched him on the shoulder, and he said to him, "Say, man," he said, "what do you got on that piece of paper? So turn around and let me see what you got on the paper." Little fella said, "What?" Said, "I'm walking through the door, minding my own business, reading from my sheet of paper to myself, and I didn't have the common decency to say hello to you. Said, and I say hello to a dog, and you stop me and ask me what have I got on my sheet of paper?" Big fella said, "That's right." He said, "I asked because I want to know." Little fella said, "Well, don't you think that I wanted you to know that I would have told you?" Big guy said, "Well, I guess so." Said, "Well, if I didn't tell you, it must not have been none of your business. Now, isn't that right?" Big fella said, "Well, if that's the way you want to look at it." So, well, that's how. Said, "That's how I want to look at it. So that's exactly how I want to look at it. Said, but you're going to find out. Said, if nobody else in town knows what's on this sheet of paper, you're gonna know. Said, because you're gonna get it straight from the horse's mouth. Said, now, Nosy, for your information, on this sheet of paper is a list of the names of all the guys that I can beat. Said, anytime I decide I wanna be nasty and just go out and mess up a man for no reason whatsoever, all I gotta do is check my sheet of paper." Big guy said, "You got a list of the names of the guys that you can beat?" Said, "That's right." He said, "I got 137 names on this list, too. Any minute, somebody's liable to get slaughtered." Big fella said, "Is my name on the list?" Little fella said, "You can bet your bottom dollar your name's on the list. It wouldn't be a list without your name on it." Said, "In fact, when I first sat down to make up the list, your name was the first name that came to my mind. Any minute, you're liable to get massacred for nothing. So now, imagine what's gonna happen if you do something." Big fella said, "What you're trying to say is you think that you can beat me." Big fella said, "No, I'm not. But I'm not trying to say that. But I'm saying, then I hope you get the message, too." Big fella said, "Well, since you think that you can beat me, I think I'm gonna take this 7.5-pound fist that I got and obstruct your vision. Because I'm about to smash you in both of your globes. And when you fall, I'm gonna be up and down in your chest like a ping pong ball. And I'm gonna proceed most profanely to make some very derogatory remarks about your mother." So now, watch it. So steady! Hold your horses, fool! Now, I tried to give you a break, so I tried. So now, I honestly tried to give you a break. But you don't want it that way. You don't want nobody to treat you decent. So now, I tried to treat you like a man, boy, but you wouldn't have it. Now, since you've had the nerve to stand here in front of my friend, the fellas that I was raised with, the fellas that I went to school with, and tried to make me look small, telling everybody what you're gonna do to me, you have left me but one alternative, and that's to take your name off the list. I believe that during the last few years, the newspapers, in regards to the Eisenhower administration, condemned Ike too much. Anytime on occasion we would pick up the newspaper, we would see the headlines, "Ike en route to Augusta," "Ike on way from Augusta," "Ike smashes golf clubs," constantly condemning the man, but they failed to bring to the public's attention some of the vital things that Ike did for the country. And I know one in particular. It wasn't in any of the newspapers. Now, if you recall, last year here in the United States, we had a visit by two very distinguished guests. We had the Russian premier and his wife come over to look around the country and see how we were doing. During their stay, I wanted to impress them with some of the masterpieces of American construction. So we find a party of four in San Francisco, standing at the foot of the Golden Gate Bridge, observing the view. There was Ike, Mamie, Khrushchev, and Khrushchev's old lady. When Ike turned to Khrushchev and he said, "Khrushchev, what you're looking at now is the Golden Gate Bridge. So that bridge is the longest single span in the world. So it took us 3 years to build that bridge. So that's really an outstanding piece of American construction." Khrushchev says, "That's nothing. So we got a bridge in Russia four times that long that we built in 2.5 years. Ike said, "You don't say." So they boarded a plane. They flew back to Newark Airport. They were riding under the Holland Tunnel into New York when Ike turned to Khrushchev again and he said, "Khrushchev," said, "now, this is the Holland Tunnel." Said, "We're really very proud of this tunnel." He said, "In fact, me and Mamie spend quite a bit of time around the White House just discussing this tunnel." Said, "Now, this tunnel took us 19 months to build and 56 men died." Khrushchev said, "That's still nothing." Said, "We got a tunnel in Russia four times this long that we built in 10 months and nobody died." Ike said, "You don't say." As they came up out of the tunnel on the New York side, Khrushchev was sitting there leaning back in the seat and he glanced up out of the window and he saw the Empire State Building and he turned to Ike. He said, "Say, Ike, what's that?" Ike said, "I don't know, Daddy, because it wasn't there this morning."